Thing about the importance of marriage in Krishna consciousness. Babies can stay if they're quiet. So in the Vedic culture, when it was perfect on this planet, thousands of years ago, everyone was under the jurisdiction of Krishna consciousness. By jurisdiction, we don't mean there was some dictatorial, oppressive rule and everyone was subject to it. But actually, there were God-conscious leaders and all the people were God-conscious. The leader was called Rajarshi. He was a king, Raja, but he was a rishi, a saintly, learned person. Just like we saw the play last night, Ramchandra was a powerful monarch of the world. He was a great saintly person with all the characteristics of a perfect human being. That is real leadership. So if all the people in the country or in the world are God conscious, that means that the God consciousness is very broad in scope. It is not that everyone is a monk. Sometimes people ask us, well, if everyone became like you, devotees of Krishna consciousness, how would things go on? How would their food be produced, or how would everything happen? So everything would happen that is necessary, such as production of food, production of progeny, but it would be done by Krishna conscious persons, and therefore it would be done in a regulated way. So as part of this system, it is called Varnashram Dharma. There are four orders of society and four spiritual orders. The four orders of society are the Brahmana class, or the intellectual, learned class, who are the teachers. And they teach even the Kshatriyas, or the administrators, the warrior class. Although they govern, the Kshatriyas take instruction from the Brahmanas. The third class is the Vaishya, or business and agricultural class. And the fourth class is the Shudra, or laborer class, those unqualified to either do business or to be Brahman or to be Kshatriya, but who serve. Then there are four spiritual orders, and they refer to the individual during his lifetime, from childhood to youth to old age. There are different spiritual orders he passes through. The first one is Brahmachari. Brahmachari means celibacy, complete celibacy, living with the guru at the guru kula. The boys join 5 years old and live with the guru and serve him as menial servant and learn character by austerity, cleanliness, and they learn spiritual knowledge about the soul, the transmigration of the soul, the eternality of the soul, and the soul's relationship to Krishna or God. That training is necessary. No matter what one is later in life, if he grows up in a youth not misspent watching television and watching his parents take intoxication and then him taking intoxication and going out into the street and talking all nonsense and wasting time at a miserable excuse for a school, educated, but he is trained up to be a real human being, strong human being in body and mind, and understanding the purpose of human life. Then, when the boy is at a certain age, he can decide, and this is also under the guru's decision or their consultation whether he wants to get married. One can get married and enter the grihastha ashram, or he can stay brahmachari the whole life. The goal of Krishna consciousness is to become completely pure of material desires, sinful desires, all material desires, and be able to think of Krishna at the time of death, and then go to the spiritual world. This is the same teaching as any bona fide spiritual teacher. No spiritual teacher, whether Jesus Christ or Buddha or Muhammad, says that life is meant to settle down, make a good material settling, and live here and enjoy as much as you can, make as much money, increase your family as much as you can, and that's the purpose of life. And then when death comes, everything is finished, and your existence is finished, or you may go to heaven, but the purpose of life is to enjoy material life. No. They all say that this place here that we're living in is not the reality. It is a temporary period of time in which one has to develop devotion to God and then go to the eternal kingdom of God. This is spiritual teaching. So, on the surface, marriage life is not advantageous to this renunciation. If my goal is that at the time of death I'm not attached to material things, then I should live my life in such a way that before death comes I've already renounced this world. Because if I haven't, if I have a great desire, if my real consciousness is just not love of God, but love of my house, a love of my car, a love of my wife, a love of my family, the result is that because of that affection and desire, after the body dies, the soul has to take another body in order to carry out those desires. Sometimes if one is intensely attached, say to a particular estate or house, but his life is degraded otherwise and there's no God consciousness, he may take another body by the mercy of God and by the laws of karma right back in that house just where he wanted. He loved that house like anything. And so he's born again in the house. But because he's degraded, he doesn't even get a human body. There's so many creatures in the house besides the human family. So you may laugh that this will never happen to me. I am a fashionable human being living a very urbane, sophisticated life, American, have some money. I'll never be degraded. But to speak of having to take a non-American human body or a non-human body. But how do you know? What is your guarantee that you shall always remain American? You cannot even remain young always. So neither can you remain American always. And of course, you don't know what you'll be in the next life. But by the vision of the Shastra, scripture, we see the law of karma is carried out in this inexorable way, that material desires result in reactions. And what if you're not born as a creature, a lower form of life, but you're again born as human? What will the advantage be? You still have to suffer. Even a human being suffers. So human life is for detachment. Then why not remain a monk? Why not remain brahmachari? Yes, if one can do that, that is very good. However, the real point is to develop love of God, not just to remain celibate. If I remain celibate and never take a wife, but somehow or other I don't get the proper guidance to develop love of God, then that will not lead me back to Godhead either. I may go to a material heavenly planet, or my so-called celibacy may last for some time and then I may fall down into some illicit connection. So if one is very strong and he can remain brahmachari, that's good. But if one honestly feels that in his youth he requires this marriage, then there is a system whereby he can live peacefully as a gentleman. I'm speaking of he, but of course I'm also, the woman is equally considered here. Except that generally, for the woman, the idea of remaining celibate and monk the whole life is not so possible. At least the Vedic system is that the woman should be protected from her own materialistic inclination. So she should be protected by her father in her youth. She should then be protected by her husband. So this marriage is a spiritual order. Just as the brahmachari is spiritual order, then they transfer to another spiritual order called grihastha. Because it is not a nonsense marriage, it is not a materialistic marriage, it is not a marriage for sense gratification. Material marriage is described in the Sanskrit word grihamedi. Grihastha means spiritual marriage. Grihamedi means material. So what is the difference? You will find the Krishna conscious householder, they may have their apartment just as the materialistic person has an apartment. The Krishna conscious man has his wife. The materialistic man has his wife. The Krishna conscious man and wife have children. The materialistic man and wife have children. There's different paraphernalia in the household in both cases. So what's the difference? The difference is that in the spiritual or grihastha marriage, the center of the whole family life is Krishna. And the center of materialistic marriage is not any different than the center of the dog's and cat's life. That is just material or sense gratification centered around sex life. Oh, there's no sex life in Krishna conscious marriage? No, there is sex life. But that is subservient to the desires of Krishna, as given by Krishna's representative. Krishna describes in the Bhagavad Gita that sex life, according to religious principles, I am such sex life performed according to religious principles. What kind of sex life is that, according to religious principles? That is that one is actually fit by spiritual training. They may engage in sex for having a child. And that itself is not spiritual because the dog is also doing that. At least they're not using contraceptives or abortion. They're producing litters. But that doesn't make it spiritual for the dog or for the human being, just to produce a lot of children. Guru nasishyat, svajana nasishyat, pita nasishyat, janani nasishyat. No one should become a mother or father or husband unless he can free the offspring from death. Namochayat yak samupraitya mityam. This is the qualification for married life and Krishna consciousness. Not that you're lusty, but that you're prepared to bring children into the world and raise them in Krishna consciousness so that they will not have to be born again. This is our whole preaching mission, to bring people to spiritual life so they develop love of God and we won't have to take another body. So if you can take such a child under your care, then you can get married. Otherwise, at least you should not produce children. The great spiritual master of our spiritual master, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, was lifetime brahmachari, naistika brahmachari. But he said he would be prepared to be grihastha and engage in sex hundreds of times if he could produce Krishna conscious children. He described himself very humbly that way. And his father, however, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, was ideal grihastha and actually did produce 12 Krishna conscious children, one of them being the great Acharya Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, by whose order our spiritual master, His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, came to the West and created this Krishna conscious movement. So this Krishna consciousness movement, therefore, is coming from this Krishna conscious child produced by the marriage of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So you cannot say that it is Maya. But you should not engage unless you can produce. Bhaktisiddhanta was a liberated soul. So you say, well, I'm not so qualified that I can produce a liberated soul. But there's another kind of offspring. That soul who is not born liberated, but you make him liberated. Just as we were rescued by our spiritual master, so a conditioned soul can become trained to become liberated. So this is married life and Krishna consciousness. There are many different rules and regulations for the grihastha in the shastra. He lives ideally as a gentleman. He earns whatever money he can without over-endeavor or dishonest means. He distributes half of his wealth to the brahmanas or devotees. He preaches out of his household, invites guests. In the shastra it says that before he eats his meal, the grihastha is supposed to go out in the public road and ask, is there anyone who has no means to eat? Please come to my place. Three times he must do that. And if some guests come, as he can accommodate them, he feeds them and he takes afterwards. Our spiritual master said that his father used to do this, and although he was not a rich man, every time they would eat, there would always be some four or five guests. This is such nice culture. He would consider, the grihastha would consider, that if in his home some lizard was living, or something like that, a serpent, that somehow he had come there, so he has to be provided for. Not like a human being, but he should not be killed. This is communism, real communism. Seeing that all the creatures, the grihastha has this responsibility, not only subhuman creatures, but he's supposed to support the Krishna conscious activities of the brahmachari and the sannyasi. So we're living in the Kali Yuga, in this Western culture. They don't know these habits. Our spiritual master has adjusted some things according to time and place, but these essentials, they must remain. That there is no sex life except for raising children. That whatever he earns, he has to try to support not only his family in some grand style, but give to the brahmanas. And he must be subjected to the order of his spiritual master still. Either he remains brahmachari and remains in the gurukula, or he goes to his home, lives with his wife, but still he remains subject to the order of the spiritual master. So there is our grihastha, living in Krishna consciousness with his wife, having children, worshipping the deity, responsibly preaching with the devotees. But then after some time, as he grows older and as his family grows up, he is also not meant to remain perpetually in the home and just become fascinated by grandchildren and, of course, materialistic life means that in order to keep his home, which is simply an abode for, in the beginning, only for sex life, then for hard work in order to support the whole thing. Of course, nowadays, everything is finished. There is not even materialistic family life. There is no family life to speak of. The Vedas criticize materialistic family life, but our age is so proud, but so degraded, there is no family life to criticize. Simply cats and dogs come together. Not that every last person is in this category, but even the statistics show that nowadays any child growing up is expected to live in a broken home, something like the percentage, over 50%, have some experience of a broken home. So this has practically become fashionable, that you get a marriage paper, have sex for a while. If there's any disruption, then mental cruelty or something or other, get a divorce and find another partner and another partner. Or don't get married. And don't have children, just have abortion. This is so degraded. So people, if they think that Krishna consciousness is against married life, we say that we are the only ones who know what family life is. Who are actually following a real family life with Krishna in the center. But this idea of remaining in family life to the end is also not the business of a Krishna conscious person. So eventually he has to become renounced of the whole situation, either with his wife and by their spending their last days going on pilgrimage to different spiritual places, or he can finally take sannyas. Either way. But they should not simply make it an arrangement for material accumulation and satisfaction, but preparing themselves for detachment and going back to Godhead. In other words, it's a cooperation. The man and the woman, they can cooperate together, actually. They think, the man thinks, well, the woman is a machine for my sense gratification, and she thinks also, yes, he's going to provide me goods. So they so-called cooperate for each other's sense gratification. They say, you please cooperate with me. It means, give me sense gratification. Give me money. Not this cooperation. They can cooperate to protect each other's Krishna consciousness. The wife can encourage the husband, and the husband can protect the wife for Krishna consciousness. So it can become double power. Lord Chaitanya, he had grihastha followers, and he did not reject them or consider them less. For he gave us the example that he himself took instruction from Ramananda Roy, who was a highly advanced devotee in the understanding of Radha Krishna. And he showed that he was prepared to take instruction from one who was, although he was a sannyasi, from an advanced grihastha. And Lord Chaitanya, he appeared in a panchatattva with five associates. They were all in that panchatattva picture. They were all householders. We also recognize the Mahajans, or 12 authorized persons in Krishna consciousness, like Brahma, Shiva, Narada, Kapila, Prahlad, Yamaraj, Sukadeva, Janaka. These persons, who are the Krishna conscious authorities, 8 of them are grihasthas. So Lord Chaitanya, he once met one of his grihastha men, and his wife was pregnant. So seeing the wife pregnant, Lord Chaitanya said, when your wife has a child, you can give the child this name. And he gave some auspicious name. So he was sannyasi. One could say, if the woman is pregnant, that means sex life. But he saw that they were Krishna conscious, so he was not against it. Whereas when one of his associates, who was sannyasi, deviated a little bit in talking to a woman, he was banished permanently from the association of Lord Chaitanya. My point is, if you're a grihastha and you live in that ashram nicely, then you can make spiritual advancement. If you're a strict grihastha, if you're a strict brahmachari, then there's no difference. So stay in that ashram and take the responsibility. People don't want to face the responsibility of married life. But we must do it in Krishna consciousness if we're going to set an example for the world. We're speaking very high morals in this talk. So these must be followed. But we cannot preach. So everyone who is involved either brahmachari. If you're brahmachari, then be brahmachari. Grihastha, then take the responsibility and be very Krishna conscious. Ultimately, we're none of these things. Lord Chaitanya said, I'm not a householder. I'm not a sannyasi. I'm not a brahmin. I'm none of these things. I'm a servant of the servant of the servant of the servant of those who serve the gopis, the intimate devotees of Krishna. So live in this ashram, but worship Krishna, chant Hare Krishna, and do your duties, preparing yourself for going back to Godhead. So this marriage, Trilokeshwar and Brajabaneshwari, is being sanctioned by this fire jaga in a Krishna conscious manner before the auspicious presence, darshan, of Sri Sri Radha Govinda, Lord Jagannath, Gauri Thai, Srila Prabhupada, and the Vaishnavas who have kindly come, and the guests. So it is very auspicious and very solemn witnessing. So we'll now proceed with the ceremonies. The next step is the exchange of vows.